Playback TV this Friday. I will be live streaming the Dallas Mavericks against the Golden State Warriors. Should be a fun matchup, man. We got two elite backcourt duos, man, with the Splash Brothers, Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson. Then on top of that, on the Mavericks side, you have Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. Hey, Steph and Kyrie, they may give us another top-tier duo matchup, man. They've had a lot of great matches in the past, so we may be in tune for another great one, man. So make sure to tune in. I will be talking about everything the game itself, alongside other things involving basketball, and I will leave the link in the description. Now, without further ado, let's get into the episode. This is another edition of For the Love of the Game. This is your one and only Nick Andre. Appreciate you guys for tuning in. Hope that everybody's having a really good week, very productive week. I'm just going to be honest, it's cold as hell, even with me being in North Florida. I know it's not as crazy as other people who are in the negatives, but it was 23 degrees this morning and I almost died. But hey, we made it though. You know, we made it through another day and I'm very happy. And we definitely have a great upcoming episode for you guys to tune into. But first, there's some big news that happened in the NBA. Another trade went down that involved the Indiana Pacers, the Toronto Raptors, and the New Orleans Pelicans, technically in a way. But Pascal Siakam is on the move. He is now headed to Indiana. The Pacers got Pascal Siakam, and they got a second-round pick. Toronto ended up getting Bruce Brown, Jordan Nwora, Kyra Lewis, who was from New Orleans, and three first-round picks. So this trade broke down in the middle of the afternoon, and obviously with the direction that Toronto was going, they just made the trade about 2-3 weeks ago, and we definitely covered that. Shout out to my guy Omar. Make sure you guys go check out that episode where we broke down the Knicks and the Raptors trade. So the Raptors clearly showed us that they were not done. And I think the writing has been on the wall for a while that they needed to go in a new direction. Siakam has been a part of that organization for so long, and he's done so much, you know, like winning a championship, and then, of course, winning Most Improved Player showed that he was the second option playing next to Kawhi Leonard in that 2019 championship run. And he's had a good career. You know, if you ask me, he's definitely got to go down as one of the greatest Raptors to ever play. Maybe not top five, who knows, but if you ask me, he's definitely top 10, But obviously, you know, all great runs come to an end, and I think this is a good situation for Siakam. I know that there was reports before about him joining Golden State, and I would have loved to see that too, because I think Golden State needs to figure things out over there out west and figure out a way to possibly regroup and, you know, possibly re-elevate themselves as champion or playoff contenders. So obviously that didn't go well. I saw some rumors that Toronto had asked for Jonathan Kuminga, and then the Warriors were hesitant. My thoughts on that is, what are you hesitant about? And as much as I love Jonathan Kuminga, I think that he's a fantastic player, and he's definitely had a pretty good season this year for Golden State. But if you want to re-elevate yourself as title contenders, you have to go for a caliber player like Pascal Siakam. And I don't know how many people watch Toronto and really pay attention to Toronto, but Siakam still has a lot of value. I mean, he's 29 years old. He'll be 30. I want to say later on this year, he has tremendous value. Last year, he had a pretty solid season. And even this year, he was able to carry it over even into this year. So, but let's focus on the situation here with him in Toronto, or excuse me, with him in Indiana. Yes, he's playing next to Tyrese Halliburton, and I love that. The Pacers have been excellent this year. You know, they've been great. Obviously, you know, we saw what they did in the in-season tournament, getting all the way to the championship game. And they continue to prove to us that they are one of the upcoming young teams in the league. I think it's them, it's OKC, it's Orlando, then it's a few others as well. But Indiana's definitely in that conversation. It is not even just Tyrese Halliburton. You know, obviously Miles Turner is the veteran there, and he's played tremendous as well. And then other guys as well. So I think it's a great situation for Siakam, and that front court with him and Turner is going to be something special. Obviously, they're not going to be like maybe a dominant 1-2 punch like like many people expect, but the spacing is going to be perfect for them. Obviously, being post players will be perfect for them as well. And I think they're going to dominate a lot of other front courts in the NBA, you know, come soon. So I'm a big fan of it, man. And like it sucks at the end of the day because, you know, Bruce Brown plays such a great role for this team. And, you know, he just came in here as a free agent. But at the end of the day, you got to understand, you know, I mean, when you have a guy like Pascal Siakam on the table, you know, I think you have to give whatever you got. And I know that there's a lot of people that were complaining about the three first round picks, but I mean, let me say this. If Rudy Gobert can go for like 6-7 first round picks, I ain't mad at Siakam going for 3 first round picks. And I know that may be a lot for a guy of his caliber, because I mean, he's not a superstar in the league by any means, but he's still a very valuable player. And, you know, I mean, like when you look at this trade, does it automatically elevate Indiana as title contenders? No, but it does allow them to go into the right direction. And I think that's what people understand. Cause I see a lot of discourse on the timeline on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. And I see a lot of people just saying like, oh, they're not contenders. Oh, they're not contenders. And it's like, it's just one step at a time. You know, you get a guy like Pascal. And I even said this a few nights ago, whenever the rumors were coming around before the trade even became official, I said, you know what, you know, yes, this is not going to make them a title contender, but this is a good stepping stone in the right direction. So, you know, when people see how Indiana possibly ends the season, it could be a free agent attraction place. You know what I'm saying? Like, or, you know, you could possibly get some other trades going down. So I'm a fan of it, man. You know, I think Siakam's going to work out well in Indiana. And on top of that, the one thing that I do love about this trade as well is that they didn't have to get rid of Obi Toppin, because when I first heard about this trade, I was thinking, you know, maybe Toronto is going to ask for a guy like Obi Toppin just because he is so valuable. But the fact that they're able to keep him and then still have Siakam, I think that's just really, really dope to me. I know people may not be as high on Obi Toppin as I am, but, you know, I think that he's been very, very valuable to this Indiana team. And the fact that they're able to keep him and that he could thrive in the second unit, I think it's going to be incredible. But as for Toronto, I'm really interested to see where they can go from here, because I've been thinking a lot about this team. And yes, I've been saying that they should rebuild, but this doesn't seem like a rebuild team to me. It seems like this is a team that's just trying to regroup. Scottie Barnes is having a hell of a season. His perimeter scoring has gotten much better. Obviously, he's still a great playmaker at the point forward position, and still being able to attack the basket and of course, being able to guard multiple positions on defense. But also, you talk about RJ Barrett, who's played pretty well, Emmanuel Quickly. Now they got Bruce Brown. They still got Gary Trent Jr. So obviously, this team is not a playoff team, but I don't view this team as a rebuild team. Now, look, there may be some other transactions that may go down like in the next month or so, especially once we get closer to the trade deadline. But I don't view this team as a rebuild team. I think that this is just a team that's trying to regroup, that's trying to figure things out. And who knows, maybe they could be a playing contender within like the next year or so. So who knows? But overall, I'm a fan of this trade. I'm glad that it went down. I felt like the writing was on the wall for Pascal Siakam to leave. I feel like he should have left a long time ago, probably the year that Kyle Lowry left and went to Miami. So for this trade to actually finally happen and for Siakam to finally pursue other endeavors elsewhere, I think it's dope, man. So definitely take a deeper look into the Pacers as the season progresses. And we'll just have to see how the season ends, man. But that's all that I have, man. Now let's get into the episode. We're talking G League basketball. Shout out to my guy Eric from Kenny's G League. And it starts right now. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Today we are talking to NBA G League because it is always good to shine a light on especially a lot of those talented guys out there. And I got a special guest with me, a guy who covers the league up closely. He is the host of Kenny's G League podcast, where he talks about just about everything G League, more so mostly the Rip City Remix. I got my guy Eric, man. How you doing today, man? Happy to have you on.
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. So my first question to you is, so what got you into the G League and what made you say, hey, I want to cover this league, particularly up closely, other than NBA or anything else?
Yeah, well, I've always been, you know, a basketball fan forever. I think like Portland fans in general are like a little bit weird and crazy in that, like, you know, like Bill Simmons called Blazers fans like 15 years ago soccer moms, you know. And so like that's kind of the attitude of Blazers fans, for better or for worse. And like I'm totally right in there. And so when the Blazers were finally going to get a G League team, I was like, sweet, this will give me a chance to watch like all these young guys that I want to see from the Blazers. And then, you know, a bunch of guys that like maybe they get a chance in the league someday. Who knows? And just a good chance to like watch the guys from the Blazers that hopefully one day get a shot, and guys from across the world that, you know, are looking for their next shot.
No, that's what's up. That's definitely what's up. So were you covering the team back when they were the D League, or did you kind of come around like once they transitioned into the G League?
Yeah, I was like aware of them when they were in the D League, and I went to a D League game a long time ago, like 15 years ago or something like that. But that was the only D League game I ever went to. So I was like aware when they were in Idaho, but I didn't follow them super closely. You know, I think like CJ McCollum played a couple games there, and so I would like watch the highlights, but that was about it.
Okay, no, I get that. It's funny because so I was born in Huntsville, Alabama, and at the time they had a D League team out there, the Huntsville Flight. It was probably for like maybe 3 or 4 years.
Oh, cool.
Obviously, I was a little too young to be able to experience it, but you know, I kind of look back on the thing. Like, I really wish I would have went to the games, you know, back when I was younger. But at the end of the day, you know, it is what it is, man. So, another thing is, so how hard is it to kind of like adjust, you know, when you're watching the G League? Because obviously, they have different rules compared to the NBA. Like, you know, they have the one free throw, which counts as 2 points, and then you know, I mean, obviously, I love it because it also makes the game faster. So how hard is it to adjust to those rules, like when you're trying to watch G League games in an NBA?
Yeah, it's pretty fun, actually. Like the Remix's first overtime game happened a couple weeks ago. And so it was cool. You know, they were going to overtime, and I was like, oh, that's right, they only got to score, you know, 7 points.
Target score, yeah.
And so then they scored 4. Yeah. And so then, you know, they were just like launching a couple threes to try to end the game. And it was a really fun end of the game, actually. So that was pretty cool. And like, honestly, I almost forgot about it for a second. The free throw is cool just because it speeds up the game. I'm fine with that. You know, like I felt like two seasons ago in the NBA when they like really were putting an emphasis on like guys like James Harden and stuff like that. And then also the take foul and stuff. And it felt like it really sped up the game for a while. It seems like it's kind of relaxed since then a little bit, but it sped up the game a little bit in the NBA. And I feel like the G League is more than that, which I like. Like I like that I can go to a G League game and it's like a couple hours, you know, and like, you don't feel like you got shorted or anything, but it's like a couple hours and you're done. You know, it's cool. I'm cool with it. But it does take a little bit. Like I brought some people to a game recently and there was, you know, like a lot of that, wait, why is he shooting one free throw? What, what are we doing? So you kind of got to, you know, explain to people sometimes like what's going on with these little rule changes. But it's not too bad. If anything, I hope that they kind of try out more things.
No, I get, honestly, you know, I'm actually a fan of it. I think it brings its own style to the G League. Yeah. I think it brings its own personality. One thing that I do say, especially when I was watching the Winter Showcase about a month ago, and I started seeing them take one free throw, it kind of like threw me off track for a second, but I also have to remember, like, yeah, you know, it's different in the G League compared to it is in the NBA or in college or anything. Obviously, you know, college, you know, whenever they get in the bonus, they have that 1-1 and everything. So I think the G League having that one free throw is actually really, really dope to see. But another question before we actually dive into the G or any games or anything is, so since you've been covering the G League, how much have you seen the league grow as a whole, and what do you believe it takes for them to possibly grow a little bit more as far as coverage and everything?
Yeah, man, that's a really good question. So since it's brand new to Portland, it's been pretty new to me too, to be honest with you. But so I think there's a few things. I think we're already seeing, just in the last like 2 or 3 years, you know, super young guys like Scoot Henderson and like these guys coming up next year, Ron Holland and Bezelis, you know, so like having these like super highly touted young prospects, I feel like that's huge for just like growing the league and interest in the league. But on the other hand, you know, the Ignite has been pretty bad, like since they started. I don't think they've won a game in the regular season yet. I think they're 0-9, you know, and so it's like there's growth in that people want to go to the games and like see, you know, Ron Holland or whatever. But then there's kind of like a part that's like holding excitement back a little bit. Cause like, you know, I was just texting some friends of mine, the Ignite are coming to Portland next week. And I'm like, we should go see the Ignite. We get to see these guys that maybe the Blazers will be looking at next draft. And they're like, oh yeah, that would be cool. But then you kind of go look at like the standings and you're like, oh, we're going to go watch
the bottom of the list,
the worst team in the league, you know? So there's like excitement, but I don't feel like it's been totally like harnessed into like making new fans yet. And then growth in Portland, I think, will be interesting just because, like I said, people in Portland really love basketball and sports in general. Like soccer's huge here, and basketball fans are obviously a big deal here. So I think that will be maybe a little bit of an outlier in the league because the games have been moderately well attended so far. And, you know, like across the league, they make it pretty easy to get in. You know, you're spending like $10 on a ticket or something. And so it's like, I think it's a good town to have the G League in. And hopefully over the next few seasons, people start to kind of get into the league in general more as more and more, you know, prospects enter the league. But it's kind of like in a funny spot right now where it's like people want to be excited about it, but they're still kind of like working their way in. You know what I mean?
No, I definitely know what you mean. So let me ask you this. So do you think that the league could possibly do better as far as, you know, coverage and like nationally televising it? Because I know that they occasionally come on ESPN, they come on NBA TV, but do you think that there could be a way that they could nationally televise it a little bit more so that people could have more eyes on it?
Yeah, that would be really great, actually, I think, because like even just me this season, just the way that like the league is promoted is honestly kind of confusing to me, because like locally they put all the Remix games over the air for free, you know, on the local TV station. That's cool, but it's only the home games. So then you got to figure out how am I going to watch the away games, you know, and then a chunk of the away games are on YouTube for free. But then every once in a while, it'll be on ESPN Plus or on the NBA app or whatever. But there's no schedule. There's no like printable schedule that tells you what channel it's on. So you kind of just like have to go searching, you know, which I understand, you know, it's a minor league. But at the same time, I think there are a lot of people that want to watch. So you might as well like make it easy to watch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely see what you mean. And the only reason why I said, I guess maybe as a like pure basketball fan of myself, you know, I've been able to watch the league for so many years, and I understand the talent that's there, and I know that it's a minor league, but you know, I think it will be a dope opportunity, you know, for a lot of these guys to get a lot of shine in. So I would love to see the G League possibly, you know, obviously, you know, get more coverage nationally, but also, you know, market it a lot more. I think it'd be really, really dope.
Yeah, and even like the showcase, you know, like. It's might as well open it to the public. I think people would want to go to that, you know, like I would go to a 2-day all day tournament. That would be awesome.
Exactly. You know, especially, I mean, if you have it down there in Orlando or wherever, I mean, Vegas. In the past. So, I mean, I think it'd be really dope, man. I definitely agree with you on that. I actually like that idea of, you know, opening it up to the public and then, you know, allowing people to really have eyes on, you know, a lot of the guys that are out there, you know, trying to compete. But let me ask you about
so much talent.
No, I definitely agree. Let me ask you about the Ignite, because you mentioned them a little bit earlier, and I've had multiple conversations with other analysts covering basketball. So in these 3-4 years that the Ignite has been here, do you think that it has grown as like a destination for like a lot of young players to, you know, decide to say, hey, you know, I'm going to skip the college, or I'm going to go here to the G League? And I'm not saying that it's a bad route, but I guess the reason why, and it's crazy because I had conversations with guys about this, and, you know, they're basically saying that a lot of guys that go to the Ignite, like, they never necessarily excel as, you know, all-star caliber players. I mean, there are some that do, but, you know, they're never like necessarily like one of the top guys in a draft class or the top guys, you know, in the NBA. I mean, obviously you got in the past, you had Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, Jaden Hardy, you know, and a few other guys that come to Scoot Henderson, you know, now. So what are your thoughts on the Ignite as a whole? And do you think that is a, do you think that is a great destination for young guys to say, hey, I'm going to skip college and I'm going to take another route and go to the G League?
Yeah. I don't have a firm like position on that yet, because I think it's too new probably for me to really be like have a firm thing. But yeah, so I'm a little bit torn, because like even Scoot, I'm watching a lot of Scoot because I watch a lot of the Blazers. I'm a big Scoot believer, but at the same time, you know, like how do you evaluate, you know, such a young guy that still obviously has a long way to go and has like a lot of growth that needs to happen to become, whether it's like a all-star level player or an all-NBA player, either way, there's a lot of growth that needs to happen before that. And so how do you evaluate that with like one or two seasons in the G League where you're playing, you know, less games, but maybe against better competition, but maybe you're, you know, I don't know. There's a lot to think about. So when you talk to people, I'm actually really curious, because I don't have a strong enough opinion yet. For people that like are big, you know, college basketball folks, what are they kind of saying about the Ignite?
So basically, I'm not saying that they're saying anything bad, but basically what they're saying is that, you know, it's not really potential for growth, you know, going to the Ignite. But I also try to remind people that you're asking 18, 19-year-old guys who are coming straight out of high school to compete against professionals. And I know that it's minor, I know that it's semi-professional, but these are guys that, you know, that are professionals, you know, especially there's a lot of two-way players out there in the NBA. So, you know, they already know what it's like to compete at the highest level, especially when they're mid-20s, going into 30s and everything. So they already have that professional experience. So that's why I try to remind people. But also, you know, it does
give... That's a great point.
Yeah, and also the thing about it to me is that it gives them that experience of, you know, getting that chance to, you know, to compete at the professional level before they actually transition to the NBA. So that's why I've always been a fan of it since day one in 2021, when they had Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, Dyson Daniels, and, you know, a few other guys. So yeah, I get it. You know, I know that over the few years that it hasn't really resulted in winning. But I do still think that it's a pretty good experience for a lot of these young 18 and 19 year old guys who are coming straight out of high school.
Yeah.
And just being able to get a feel of what the professional league is like before they actually do go into the draft and eventually go into the NBA. But also people got to look at it like this. I mean, I want to say Jalen Green, I can't remember exactly what pick he went, but I know he went like at least top five. And I know that Jonathan Kuminga went top 10. So, you know, obviously can't be that bad to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like if Scoot had come out this season and just like came out of the gate and was really exciting, you know,
right,
that probably like changes the whole conversation. As soon as one guy that's like top five just like busts out of the gate, it's going to take one guy for people to go, oh shoot, this like is the next place where you're going to find your star player, you know?
And that hasn't happened yet. And that was the point that I wanted to make too, because I'm just imagining like if we could get like a five-star type player to like for instance, like a guy of Mikey Williams caliber, you know, who is one of the best or one of the biggest high school stars, you know, in the country. Like if he decides, hey, I'm not going to go to college, I'm going to go straight to the G League, I think that it'll really attract, you know, a lot of the other guys who may be like, you know, a few years younger than him, say, hey, you know, if he can go to the G League and not skip college, then maybe I can do the same as well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I do feel like the league is going to keep growing. So I don't think it's going to be that long until some guy does exactly that.
No, I definitely get that. But like I said, I mean, it's like you mentioned earlier, it's still a very young organization. So I think it'll take some time. I mean, you know, it's difficult, you know, trying to get younger guys to, you know, to be able to commit to that, you know, especially when you grow up and you watch Duke or you watch Kentucky or you watch North Carolina or UCLA or whatever it is. So, you know, you're a young kid watching these teams, you know, compete at the highest level, compete in March Madness. So a lot of guys really dream of that one day. And then on top of that, you know, a lot of college programs have been around for centuries. So at the end of the day, you know, they're always going to get that upper nod just because of that. So with the G League Ignite being in year three, I don't think it's been too bad, honestly, but I know that there's other people that have had an opinion. So I just wanted to get your insight on it.
Yeah. I think that'll be something to watch for. And like, I really wish that, you know, whether it's like the G League playoffs or whatever, I really wish that takes a little bit of a step up. Cause it is like, if I was 18 and someone was like, oh, you're either going to play in the G League playoffs or March Madness. Like, yeah, I'm gonna go be in March Madness. That sounds right. Way cooler, you know? But like, it doesn't mean that it always has to be that way, you know?
Right. And that's honestly where I feel like maybe more national coverage could play a role in that too, because, you know, if a lot of guys, 100%. You know, if they're at home at night, you know, and they see, I don't know, maybe a big G League doubleheader between this team or that team, you know, maybe that'll, you know, possibly attract them more. But like I say, you know, I'm still a fan of the Ignite. You know, I'm a fan of the team this year. Ron Holland is one of my personal favorites. You know, I think he's going to be one of the top draft picks. And I just want to see where it grows, you know, from here on out.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's going to be really fun.
Right. But, you know, moving on. So for people who don't know, I wanted to get you on after the Winter Showcase, but unfortunately, you know, we weren't able to. So I just wanted to get your quick thoughts on what took place and how did you feel about that championship game when the Westchester Knicks beat the Indiana Mad Ants.
Yeah. The showcase was pretty cool. I like Toppin. I like watching him. Mm-hmm. And the Mad Ants have had a really great, well, I guess, showcase.
I don't know what their record.
I think last time I checked,
they were like 4-4. I don't know if that's changed recently. I don't know if they played tonight and it may have changed, but I know they were
having a great showcase. I didn't watch enough of those two teams during the regular season, aside from I like a couple players that they have and I was rooting for Toppin, but two really pretty fun teams. What about you? Did you have any kind of takeaways from
I'll be honest. I mean, I definitely agree with you. You know, I watched how the Mad Ants play, you know, throughout the showcase. You know, once they went to Orlando, I was like, you know, I don't think there's any team that could beat them, especially with the veteran presence that they had. You know, when you talk about an Elfrid Payton and who's Jordan Bell, and then of course, you know, Jairus Walker is a young guy, you know, who's on the come up, and then other guys as well, like Kendall Brown and, you know, a few other guys. But I gotta give credit to the Knicks, man. You know, they came in, they got off to a really great lead. I want to say the Madness, you know, took momentum in the second quarter, but you know, they just stayed grounded, you know, throughout the entire game. You know, Brandon Goodwin led the way. He had like 13 assists in the game, but then also you had other guys like Charlie Brown Jr., like you mentioned, you know, Jacob Toppin. So you know, it was an overall great showing for the Knicks, you know, especially going into that game. I'm sure they were the underdogs to many. So for them to be able to beat the Mad Ants in that contest, you know, that was really, really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Mad Ants are really good. Let me see. I ought to look at the schedule. I can't remember if the Remix are playing them coming up or not, but yeah, really, really good team.
Yeah, they definitely are. Was there any other players in particular that you saw that you were really, really impressed with, you know, during that Winter Showcase?
Let's see. During the Winter Showcase, maybe not during the showcase in particular, to be honest with you. There's a few guys that I was hoping would get a 10-day somewhere after that on the from the Remix, but I don't think anyone's been called up yet, unfortunately. But maybe here in the next few weeks, because it's about that time to start calling up some 10-days, even if it's not on the Remix.
Yeah, I get that. You know, I mean, I think that there's definitely a few guys that definitely do deserve those opportunities. I think a few that stand out to me is I think Devon Dotson on Capital City Go-Go. I really like the way that he played. Same thing with Diallo on the team as well. There was a few guys on College Park Skyhawks that I really liked as well. So, you know, there's a lot of guys, you know, going into that Orlando area, you know, they came in locked in and that's why I love the Winter Showcase, because it gives these guys an opportunity, especially with no fans there. You know, it's strictly just scouts and GMs and everything. You know, they're just able to compete at the highest level and of course, you know, show their value and like show people, you know, how much they or how valuable they can be to an NBA team. So that's part of the reason why I enjoyed it. But but let's dive into the Rip City Remix, man. This is your team in particular. So my first question, when you talk about the Remix, so obviously, this is a very new team. So, what was the atmosphere like? You know, once they announced that there was a team coming into the G League, because you mentioned earlier that Portland is more of a basketball city as a whole.
Yeah. Like I was saying earlier, I feel like Portland is an underrated sports town. People love soccer and basketball, and you know, they like had a little event to announce the team name and everything at University of Portland. And, you know, a good chunk showed out for like a random Tuesday afternoon, you know. And they're really trying to like put an effort into the remix to make it something that, you know, you'll like bring your kids to. That's kind right. of the vibe that they're going for. And so people were honestly more excited than I probably expected about a G League team in Portland. We haven't had one since the Idaho Stampede, and that dissolved quite a while ago now. And so the Blazers have had to send players to the Clippers and stuff like that, you know. And there's kind of like a whole host of people you could blame for that, that they don't have a G League team. But my understanding is that as soon as Joe Cronin was given the GM position, he basically made it priority number one to get a G League team in town, and to have it in town rather than like in a suburb or something like that, which is pretty cool. They use the same practice facility as the Blazers, so it's pretty integrated, you know? So yeah, I feel like excitement has been pretty high, and people seem pretty eager to get out of some games.
No, I love it. I definitely believe that every team or every NBA team in particular should have an affiliate. And, you know, for Portland to not have one for so long and now finally have one, I think it was dope, man. So,
yeah, it's been super cool.
Yeah, definitely. So, obviously, a lot of people know Scoot Henderson, you know, especially early in his rookie season, he was assigned to the Remix. He didn't play a game with them, but he was assigned to them, especially after the struggle that he had. So, like, what do you remember from, like, you know, his short time, you know, whether it's, you know, being in practice or anything, or just, you know, being with the team, you know, while he was, I want to say he was battling an ankle injury at the time too.
So the Blazers were out of town.
Yeah.
They were like heading out of town. And so they assigned Scoot to the Remix. And I think he was there for like 3 hours and, you know, he went through a practice just to get some court time. And, you know, since the team is like new to town, I feel like it kind of was lost on some people. I saw a good number of tweets that were like, is Scoot going to play this next Remix game? No, he was there for like 3 hours. And then you get the Blazers PR tweet that he's been, you know, sent back to the Blazers after that afternoon practice. Yeah, there was like some confusion around that. People assumed he was going to play a game, which I can totally understand if you got a text update that's like Scoot's been assigned to the Rip City Remix. But it's pretty normal for guys coming off of injury to do that. But at the same time, it's kind of normal for guys coming off of injury to play a game or two. So even though I knew it wasn't going to happen, I was hoping he was going to play that next game. That would have been awesome. But no luck there. He just went through a practice and then headed home.
Yeah. So real quick, so what has been your observation on this season? Because obviously he's playing a lot better, but, you know, early in the season or early in his rookie season, it was a struggle.
Yeah.
And I was trying to tell people that, you know, I mean, it's okay that he didn't come out the gates averaging like 20, 25 points a game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, this is a young guy. I think he's like 19, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously, and yes, we know that he did play in the G League, but obviously playing in the NBA is a totally different, you know, atmosphere. So, what has been your observation on him, you know, early, and how much have you seen the growth from his early rookie season to now recently?
Yeah. There's a little bit, there's a pretty big contrast there, in my opinion, between like his first six games or whatever it was before he got that ankle injury. And then basically whenever he came back from the ankle injury to now, before the season started, you know, with all the Dame stuff going on and Dame getting traded and then the Blazers picking Scoot, friends would ask me, you know, like, oh, do you think Scoot is going to be like, is his rookie season going to be as good as Dame's was? And I would be like, I really don't think that's going to happen, to be honest with you, because Dame's rookie season was incredible.
It was amazing. Like, I remember
game one.
Yeah.
Game one, he had like 22-10. Or something
it's,
like that.
It's funny. I remember that, man. I remember actually watching the game. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you could tell from day one, okay, this guy is going to be a star, you know? And I just was trying to like temper expectations a little bit on Scoot, as much as I think he's going to be really good. There's hardly any teenagers that come in the league, let alone point guard teenagers, that can average what Dame did his rookie season. I'll have to look it up, but you know, it was something like 18-6, like, or 18-7. It's an amazing stat line for a rookie point guard.
Exactly.
And then, you know, Scoot comes out his first six games or whatever, and like you said, he has a lot of struggles. You know, his shooting struggles are like probably the biggest thing from day one. And you could see that the passing ability was there, but at the same time, Anfernee Simons went down with injury in game one, and he's the shooter. He's like the only shooter on the team, you know? And so like his passing ability was there for sure, but it's just like already from game one, kind of like getting tighter and tighter, his options, you know? And then after Scoot came back from that injury, he's been shooting pretty good. His three-point shot has really come along after that injury. He's shooting essentially league average three-pointers right now. And his passing ability is still incredible, I think. You know, his effective field goal percentage is not great. And his, you know, turnovers have been a problem at times. But I think you see more and more the reasons that he was a number three pick, even if you can also see the reasons, you know, that he's inexperienced. So I still think that the potential is as high as it's ever been, but for a lot of people, myself included, it's hard to see how far and how long that might take. You know what I mean? Like, it might be his third or fourth season where you start to see what he really could become, even though we're starting to see glimpses of it now. It was just like unreasonable to expect that it would be his rookie season that we see, you know, this all-star potential, even if it's still there.
Right. You know, I definitely understand. I mean, to me, the ceiling is still super high for him.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, obviously the talent's there. Tremendous all-around player, you know, with crazy athleticism. So I'm still really high on him. And I was even telling people too, is like, you know, it's okay, you know, if he comes out of the gate struggling, you know, as long as he's able to figure out later on, which many people did expect him to, and he's done that. And I know that there's a lot of pressure too, being in the same draft class as a guy like Victor Wembanyama. And obviously we're seeing what Wemby's doing right now with the Spurs. But you know, for him to be able to figure it out, you know, after those struggles, has just really, really been incredible. And he's really showing a lot of potential, you know, as far as being that Blazers starting point guard, and then of course being the future franchise player as well. So I'm really, really happy for him. But another guy I want to discuss is, and I hope that I say his name right, because I've been trying to pronounce his name correctly, but I don't know if I'm doing it right. Duop Reath, I want to say it is.
Yeah.
Duop Reath. Okay, yeah. So he played one game with the Rip City Remix, had a monster 37.10 rebound performance. What do you remember from that performance, you know, especially early in the season?
Yeah. He was just bombing three-pointers the whole game. I can't remember what he shot for the game, but he must have hit like seven or eight. He had an amazing first game there. And he's been really nice to see come into his own on the Blazers. You know,
yeah, he has.
He's 27. He's played like all over the world. He's played in, you know, different leagues, and played for the Blazers at Summer League. And a lot of people at Summer League that I was talking to felt like he looked like the best center on the floor most of the time. And at the time, I don't think anyone was expecting the Blazers two-way players to get cut and Reath to get that spot, you know? So he really, you know, took it upon himself to go get it. Because I thought he was just going to be one of those Summer League roster guys. And then, you know, they're gone. They go off and they unfortunately get cut, even if they did look pretty solid in Summer League. But then here he is, you know, he scores 32 on that opening night, and he's like starting center for the Blazers for a good chunk of the season.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was obviously a big performance from him. And I was able to watch it a little bit of it yesterday. And, you know, I mean, it's like you say, you know, he was bombing shots, you know, being able to space the floor really well, being able to put the ball on the floor. Of course, had some defensive moments as well. So he just pretty much dominated from start to finish, you know, against the Lakers. And, you know, it was really, really impressive. And it's obviously a reason why he's on the Blazers now, you know, getting good minutes. So I'm happy that he's able to get that performance. You know, obviously, I mean, like you say, you know, he was part of the G League team. I don't know if a lot of people were really paying attention, but obviously, you know, after that type of performance, you know, obviously all eyes were going to be on him after that. So really happy for him.
Sounds like just from people around the team that they're going to convert him at some point to just a regular contract rather than a two-way. And I'd imagine they want to do that pretty soon. Ought to figure that out soon, because I think the Blazers are down to 13 on the roster right now. So they need to fill that 14th spot anyway. And he's definitely going to get it, it sounds like.
Nah, definitely, man. But let's talk about this current team right now. So last time I checked, or after they just defeated the OKC Blue for the second straight game last night, they're now 5-3 on the year. They beat OKC. They beat Mexico City Capitanes. They beaten the Delaware Blue Coast. So what has been your early takeaway from this regular season with the team?
Yeah, so my early takeaway is that the team is pretty different so far in the regular season than it was in the showcase. Mostly because the Blazers have had so many injuries that they've called up all the two-way guys for the last several games, and so they haven't been with the Remix. So like Ibu Baji's been on the Blazers, and Justin Manaya, and of course Dwight Breith, and then the two regular contract Blazers, Ryan Rupert and Chris Murray, have both been spending more time on the Blazers recently than the Remix. So the Remix, you know, they pretty much lost their top five guys. And you know,
this is almost like an entirely different roster almost.
Yeah, totally. And so they've been looking really good. You know, like they use guys like Rupert a ton. So it's been interesting to see, I don't know, kind of these guys that maybe were getting a few less touches recently kind of get to show out, you know. Like Antoine Davis has had some really good games recently. He's a really good shooter. His minutes have gone up quite a bit in the last several games. So it's been cool to see him get that opportunity more recently. Him and Ashton Haggins are kind of your starting guard rotation. And they're looking really good. George Condit. I'm a George Condit fan. I think he's actually pretty darn solid.
That's another guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
I didn't really
watch
him when he was in college. Did you watch him at all?
I honestly didn't really watch him at all until, you know, tried this a few days ago whenever I was going back watching Rip City games. But he's super versatile. Like, you know, the ability to play in pick and roll, the ability to, you know, being able to space for knock down 3-point shots. And his defense is just really, really great as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's been like a pretty good surprise for me with the team overall, is that their shooting in the showcase was pretty bad. To be honest, they were really struggling shooting the ball for a while. I think there was only two guys that were shooting like above league average. And so they were struggling, but their defense was kind of what was holding them together most often. And now their shooting is starting to come back a little bit, with some of those guard lineups starting to come on, like Antoine Davis. So I hope that kind of continues in that direction. But yeah, that's been the main thing, is just kind of seeing them regroup with some different lineups and finding some success there.
Talk about the presence of Mo Harkless as a veteran, because, you know, he's obviously a guy that has ties to the Portland organization. You know, he played about 4 to 5 years with them in the past, and now he's back. He's looking to make a comeback in the NBA as well. So talk about his veteran presence and how it's been able to benefit the guys on the Remix.
Yeah, I really like Mo Harkless. I was a big fan of his when he was on the Blazers. Well, it's been cool to come back to town for him for a couple of reasons. You do see him, you know, on the bench a lot, talking to a lot of the younger guys, and just kind of like being the veteran presence on the team. He's definitely, you know, the veteran on the team. So that's really positive. He plays pretty considerably, and he had played played for the Remix's head coach. They were both in Portland at the same time, you know, so you kind of have like this homecoming thing with playing for his old assistant coach in Jim Moran. And then on the other side of it, you see people like at every single game, someone has a Harkless jersey that they're like trying to get him to sign or something like that. So that's been pretty cool. He's definitely like the fan favorite for sure. It seems like, but yeah, just like always talking to the younger guys, it seems like, and doesn't seem like he's not interested in the G League, if that makes sense. Like,
right.
I think it would be easy for a NBA veteran to, you know, go to the G League and not really feel like they have to have that responsibility, because they probably don't, you know.
Right.
But he still seems, you know, encouraging, and like he's bought into playing for the team, you know.
Yeah, at least to me, it seems like he's really beloved in the city of Portland, obviously because of his contributions and, you know, in those past teams, you know, playing next to guys like Dame, CJ McCollum, and the rest of those guys. So obviously, you know, he has ties there. And then now, years later, you know, being able for him to be able to come back and, you know, be on the sideline with the Remix, you know, I think is really, really dope, especially for a lot of the young guys. So I'm happy for him. You know, he's had a couple good games, you know, with the Remix so far. Yeah. He only played about maybe six games or something like that. But
yeah,
you know, even in the games that he's played, you know, you see his contributions early. We talked about.
Yeah, I hope he gets called up at some point, just because he's still relatively young. You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that he will. I mean, I think there's a lot of, I mean, especially Portland, you know, I think that not even just Portland, but even like other teams in the NBA that could use a guy mm-hmm. with some veteran experience, you know, especially, you know, for guys who have been in the playoffs before. So, you know, Mo Harkless is definitely a guy, you know, who still shows a lot of value, you know, on both ends of the floor. So I think that he should get picked up really soon.
Yeah, I hope that happens for him.
Yeah, for sure. So we talked about George Condon. I want to talk about another big that you guys have, which is Alex Reese, because I've really, really been impressed with him mm-hmm. on both ends of the floor. You know, so what has been your early impression of him?
Well, he's been one of those guys that was one of the few guys that was shooting pretty well from three throughout the season. So that was like a big time contribution there. He's had some really good defensive moments too. In a couple of these games that were pretty tight towards the end there. I've been really impressed with him. Kind of that stretch four, although I guess in the modern NBA, that's just a four. Right. But he definitely fits that mold to me of like a stretch big. Yeah, he's been really important to the team so far. I would be interested to see what he would look like playing against some bigger teams, you know.
Bigs, yeah.
But I think there's a lot to like there in his game if he can continue to stretch the floor.
Yeah. How do you like that front court with him and George Condon together, possibly?
Yeah. They've looked pretty good. And you know, the Remix are like missing who I assumed it would be playing all the center minutes right now, Ibu Baji and Dwap Reith. So, you know, they've gone with Condit a lot and they've gone with Alex Reese quite a bit. And I think they've both looked really good. You don't see the 3-point range with Condit really, but you have a lot of really good defensive instincts, I think, there. He's a little bigger. He's 6'11". So you have a little more of like your traditional center presence, I think, there. And so they can pair together pretty well.
No, I like it. I mean, obviously, those are two versatile guys. You know, they get after on defense, and then, of course, they can play inside and out on offense, and then, of course, show their post presence as well. So I've really been impressed with both of those guys. I mean, and I think that their versatility has definitely helped, you know, the Remix being able to elevate as a team. So we talked about the front court. Now let's talk about the back court, which I'm really a fan of, which is Ashton Hagans and Antoine Davis. For those who may not know, Antoine Davis was a sniper when he played for Detroit Mercy. And obviously that has translated now to the G League. So talk about how that back court has been able to shine together.
Yeah, they've been a lot of fun to watch. Just in the last handful of games, like I said earlier, Antoine Davis has really kind of started to make it his own a little bit. You know, his 3-point shot has come on. He's the second highest college scorer of all time, which is insane to me. and kind of paired with Ashton Hagans, who's a little bit more of a defensive minded player.
Right.
It's a pretty good pairing, you know. They're maybe a little on the small side of things for what you would want, like a two guard. But he brings the scoring that you kind of need him to bring if you're going to be playing two smaller starting guards. So they play together quite well, and Hagans, it seems like, has played through a lot of like nagging injuries and stuff. He's gotten beat up quite a bit during the season, but he kind of keeps that intensity, which is kind of surprising to me because he's gotten beat up in the last couple games that I went to pretty bad, but he returned in both of them, which I did not expect, to be honest with you.
Nah, I mean, they're both definitely fun to watch. It seems like Ashton is a really fun guy to be around, Tim. It's funny because earlier today I was watching him, a video of him mic'd up, and, you know, obviously him talking to everybody, dapping everybody else. So it seems like he's a really fun guy to be around. And obviously for those who watched him, you know, during his time at Kentucky, you know, you saw the potential there. It's just unfortunate that that was a COVID season, and, you know, obviously they weren't able to play in the tournament that year. But even if they were to, I feel like he definitely could have really shined, you know, especially on the high stage. But
yeah, you know, he seems like a good guy. I was talking to a friend of mine a while ago that covers the Raptors 905, and he was there for a minute, and, you know, she had nothing but good things to say about him. And there was that, I'm sure it was the clip that you watched where he scored a bucket, I think to put him ahead. I can't remember. And he found the camera on the baseline, and he was like, I'm him. That was awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy too. And it's crazy because I was watching the game against the Delaware Bluecoats, and just watching these guys, you know, come alive, you know, towards the end of the second half. Because they were down big, you know, in that game, and just for them to be able to come back, have a second half comeback. Ashton Hagans had a nice drive to the basket, you know, get the and-one to tie the game. And then Antoine Walker comes back in overtime, and then, of course, hits the game winning shot to, you know, to be able to win the game. So those two together, it seems like something that could possibly be something really, really special. And obviously those guys are capable of, you know, playing at the next level. So if they can only continue to just do what they do, I think that they're going to have a bright future together.
Yeah, they're super, a super fun duo.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So just a few more questions before we get out of here. So like I said before, you know, they're at 5-3 right now, the Remix are. Do you possibly see them being like a true contender in the G League this year? Do you think that there's still some room to grow?
Yeah, we'll see. I think they're just on the cusp right now of like 7th, 6th place. And that's a tough one. I don't really know. I would like for them to make the playoffs, obviously. But like I said earlier, you know, we're going to have to see, I think, that the shooting come around from the showcase, because that was really what was holding them back. I like their offensive sets oftentimes, but the shooting is like essentially hanging them out to dry. You know what I mean? I like what they're doing, but they just don't get the payoff of like actually hitting those shots, because like I said, they only had a couple guys that were shooting above league average from three. So it was kind of holding them back, you know? And like if Antoine Davis can kind of be that guy, and maybe a couple of these other guys that they've brought in recently, just in the last couple of weeks, really can fill a role. I would like to see that. I don't know if they, you know, will come around to being a top team in the West this season. But I think they've already shown that like they have probably a higher ceiling than they showed during the showcase.
Right. I definitely get that. So you talk about the inconsistency on offense. So what do you think that they should do more to possibly help them elevate as a team? Like, do you think that they should have more ball movement, more screen action, you know, more, you know, possible, you know, high percentage shots at the rim? Like, so what do you think that they should do better on offense to help them get ahead?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I think part of it probably depends on like how much are they looking to develop aspects of the guys' games versus how much do they want to like play into the strengths that they already know that they have, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so like I like a lot of the shots that they're getting. They just weren't falling a lot of the times during the first half. And at the same time, I think some of those actions are like really benefiting guys like Ryan Rupert, who they're just like trying to feed as many minutes as they can give him, you know, to develop him for the Blazers. And so sometimes I, you know, wonder that myself, where it's like, on the one hand, you want to see the things that a guy like Ryan Rupert is already good at, just to kind of hone in on that. But at the other, at the same time, you're trying to develop this really young player in kind of like an expedited way, you know what I mean? And with right. that is going to come some failures, you know? And so I'm kind of torn on like, would I like to see them do something different? I don't know, because I feel like oftentimes I like what they're running. It's just that you kind of have to have the development catch up to it. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I definitely get that. I mean, one thing that I could say is that they definitely have the offensive firepower to make those things happen, you know, just to be able to make those assistants, you know what I mean? They got a lot of talented scorers on the team who could play inside and out. So, you know, I think, you know, as long as they can just continue to develop, I think that's the biggest thing, is just development. And if they can continue to do that, and obviously those guys continue to elevate as a team, I think that they could definitely be there. I mean, they got a talented group of guys. They may not be up there in the Western Conference with teams like this, the SoFal Sky Forest or anybody else. But, you know, I think that, you know, if this group can possibly stay together, maybe another year or so, who knows? So, you know, maybe we may see a difference. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot to like. You just, you know, it's tough to be season one, and it's tough for me to like nitpick them too much, because you're kind of still feeling it out so much.
No, I definitely get that, man. And like I say, there's only going to be more room to grow, move forward, man. But yeah. Eric, I appreciate you for coming on the show, man. You know, this is definitely a great conversation. Would love to have you on again, but definitely let the people know where to find you, where to find the podcast and everything.
Yeah, you can find the podcast, Kenny's G League, anywhere you get podcasts. You can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram as well, at Kenny's G League. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. You know, I'm a big fan of the podcast myself. I've listened to a few episodes, man, and you have a lot of insight, man. So I definitely appreciate you for coming on.
Oh, thanks, man.
Sharing the insight on my show as well. So definitely appreciate the listeners for tuning in. Follow us on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. I love it, TGB Ball. Follow myself and Nick Andre ATR. Make sure to subscribe on any platform that you listen to, Apple, Spotify, you name it. And until next time, you guys, deuces.